produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Daily Audio Stash is where responsible marijuana smokers listen in on the latest news about cannabis, hear the voices of the marijuana law reform movement in special segments and interviews, and kick back with comedy and music no other podcast can offer. It's Normal's Daily Audio Stash. More information at normalaudiostash.com. First up today, it's news from Normal. Our news today, California city shuts down medical marijuana facility. City officials in Monrovia, California have closed a medical marijuana dispensary after it was open for just 3 days. Monrovia officials claim the business license approved was for a, quote, vitamin and herb store, close quote, and that a medical marijuana dispensary would have required a conditional use permit. The owner of the Monrovia Patient Collective, Steve Leon, stated to the local press that he and his lawyer were honest about the nature of the business. Steve Sizemore, the city's planning division manager, claims that Leon did not make any connection between the medical marijuana dispensary and the store he opened. A special city council meeting was called on August 11th, in which the council enacted a 45-day moratorium on all medical marijuana dispensaries, so that they are not permitted anywhere in the city. The issue will be further discussed at the upcoming September 5th council meeting. Monrovia is approximately 35 miles northwest of Los Angeles. City councilors in West Hollywood approved a marijuana deprioritization ordinance earlier this year. The ordinance, making marijuana West Hollywood's lowest law enforcement priority, was in process to appear on a ballot for voters to decide, when the city council instead chose to adopt the ordinance on their own. California Normal lists dozens of medical marijuana patient collectives and dispensaries throughout the Los Angeles region, found online at www.canorml.org. And we have links at normalaudiostash.com. Welcome back to the Audio Stash today. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal to end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit normal.org. Later in the program today, during our legal and legislative issues focus, we'll speak with Normal's founder, Keith Strupp, about the legal details of local marijuana deprioritization ordinances. But first today, we have some more exhilarating audio from Seattle's HempFest. Last week, we heard an interview between HempFest director Vivian McPeak and former Seattle police chief Norm Stamper. Norm serves on Normal's advisory board and is author of the new book, Breaking Rank. We have links to it at normalaudiostash.com. Having the former Seattle police chief speak on stage in front of a crowd of tens of thousands of marijuana legalization advocates was one of the true highlights of HempFest this year. It certainly sounded like the highlight for Vivian himself, as we'll hear in this introduction.
Man, this has got to be the greatest day in my life, and I'm not kidding. This is the greatest day in my life, and because of you folks and this beautiful weather and this wonderful sound and this great city in this amazing country with these beautiful vendors, these amazing musicians, these great speakers, man, these great speakers, and our amazing staff and all of our sponsors. What an oasis of freedom and First Amendment constitutional rights to gather and peacefully assemble. Seattle's the greatest city in the world! And I can prove that. 15 years ago, I stood on the little amphitheater at Volunteer Park at the first Seattle Hemp Fest. It was called the Washington State Hemp Expo. Who was there? We've grown since then. We've become a force to be reckoned with. We become the largest hemp rally in the world. If you'd have told me back in 1991, Vivian, in 15 years from now, our chief of police is going to come up on your stage at Hempfest, and he's going to be speaking out the same message you guys have been speaking, I'd have said, I don't know what you're smoking, man, but it's really, really strong. It's kind of seems like a conventional wisdom would say it's impossible, but if you also told people, you're going to have 100,000 people down in the most beautiful park right by the Space Needle, and you're going to have 1,000 volunteers, and bands are going to come from all over different states to play for free, and speakers are going to fly in from all over the country, and you're going to have it, and the place is going to be cleaner than a whistle when you're done, and the police are going to walk around smiling and be cooperative and responsible and respective, man, and support us and help us and save us when we're sick and down. They'd say, that's impossible. We've done what's impossible! You made it possible. Now, man, Randy Rhodes, and now this. The former Seattle chief of police, the author of the book Breaking Rank, give a warm Seattle historic welcome to our former Seattle police chief, Norm Stamper!
Thank you very, very much for that warm welcome. Thank you. Thank you. I became a police officer in 1966. I can't even believe I just said that. It was the year my son was born. In the police academy, we'd spend half the day in the classroom, the other half the day in the field. The very first night that I was on patrol, I saw an act of unspeakable domestic violence. A man who had battered his wife's face so badly that her features were indistinguishable. In the background, children crying and sobbing and wailing in fear. We arrested that man. We broke down his door to get to him. We arrested that man and we put him in jail. A little later that year, I arrested a couple of people who had committed a robbery with knives and had cut up an elderly man behind the counter of this mom-and-pop convenience store. A little later, I presided over an investigation into the San Diego Metropolitan Homicide Task Force investigation into the deaths of 44 sex industry workers. I have been involved throughout my 34 years in San Diego and in Seattle in law enforcement with violent crime, with predatory crimes that hurt people and frighten people and cause them to change the way they live. Those are the kinds of crimes that your police department, that every police department in this country should be focused on. Not non-violent drug offenders. I love police officers. Good ones. And there are legions of good police officers. People who think, people who care, people who exhibit compassion and sensitivity and responsiveness to the community that hired them. I love them. And it pains me greatly when one of them gets hurt or worse. Like police officer Lito Barber, who was killed a week ago today by a driver traveling 80 miles an hour in a business district. I take my small moment of silence in the memory of Lito Barber and many, many other police officers slain in the line of duty. Many of them caught in the crossfire of violent drug trafficking.
All right, next is Chris.
Drug trafficking is as popular and as lucrative as it is. I'm talking now about illicit drug trafficking because the product is illicit, which then carries this extraordinary price, which causes people to arm themselves, to expand or protect their markets. Causes police officers to raid houses. Sometimes the wrong houses.
Time, they provide energy, they provide
the culture of drug dealing, illicit really drug dealing, is by definition a violent culture. The only way to reduce that violence is to extract the profits from the illicit trafficking and to regulate and control drugs rather than banning those drugs.
Doing a part to sort of train the next generation of drug.
I am a proud member of the Normal Advisory Board. I'm a member of the Drug Policy Alliance. And I am an extremely proud member of LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition.
Drug policy or normal or others.
We are 5,000 strong police officers who value the Constitution, who value your civil liberties, the civil liberties of all Americans. Police officers who know that prohibition has never worked, is not working now, and never will work. Police officers, in short, who support regulation and control of drugs and not their prohibition. I would like to urge you, if you happen to be a proponent of drug policy reform that falls shy of legalization, a word that I utter cautiously and carefully in a marijuana reform movement setting, nothing that we do in LEAP should in any way compromise or jeopardize a more incremental approach or approach that advocates the prohibition of hard drugs. I understand that. I respect it. And I will work as diligently and as cooperatively and as respectively as I possibly can, and so will my organization, to ensure that we do not compromise marijuana law reform. If there is an exemplar of the silliest law on the books, it is, in fact, the prohibition against marijuana. If you want to support us, please visit that same website and sign on as a friend of LEAP. If you are not a member of DPA or Normal or many of the other drug policy reform organizations, please give some thought to doing that. It hurts me every time I think of the police being used as frontline soldiers in somebody else's drug war. I refer to the president of this country, to the head of DEA, to the attorney general. I refer to everyone in those comfortable offices in Washington, D.C., who are prosecuting this unwinnable and immoral war at the tune of $69 billion per year, and then putting police officers in the role of the bad guy or police officers in the role of nanny. This is fundamentally about freedom, your freedom, my freedom, the freedom of each and every one of us. Thank you.
We also work primarily on issues that affect young people and students. And the number one issue that we worked on that we were really...
Okay, I can die now. My mission has been fulfilled. Nope, it's not legal yet. I gotta stick around. Darn! Norm Stamper!
We just heard Norm Stamper, Seattle's former police chief, speaking on the main stage at this year's HempFest. Next up today, a very special song from one of Normal's most talented friends, musician John Nicholson. John sang a set at the Normal Conference this year in San Francisco, and this next track is a great example of how John writes music from the heart about marijuana. We have links to John on iTunes at normalaudiostash.com.
Grandma's turning 92, and that's a lot of years ahead of you. So listen close to what I say. Grandma's feeling old today. She said, I can't believe I'm sitting here, old as I am, never been stoned. I waited too damn long, so bring it on. Grandma's gonna fly. So I rolled it up and I passed it around. Grandma smoked the whole thing down. Said she was making up for wasted ground. So too many times she turned it down. She said you live your life until it's gone. The things you never try just slip away till they're gone too. I waited too damn long. Bring it on, Grandma's gonna fly. And then she talked about the old days, said some things that blew my mind. See, 'cause you ain't seen a thing till you seen Grandma getting high. Didn't have much time left, but she made use of every breath. And I swear she smiled before she left, as I felt the world fall off her chest. Gates of heaven open wide, she slipped over to the other side. She was singing, hey, hey, hey. I waited too damn long, so bring it on. Grandma's gonna fly. So bring it on, 'cause Grandma's gonna fly.
That was a very special song from one of Normal's great friends, musician John Nicholson. We have links to John's website and John on iTunes at normalaudiostash.com. And now it's time to check in with a true legal expert on the details of making marijuana law enforcement's lowest priority. Keith Strupp is the founder of the Normal Foundation and joins us frequently here on the Audio Stash to go in-depth on the legal stories we hear on the program. Keith, welcome back to the Audio Stash today.
My pleasure. Chris, nice to be with you.
Great to have you with us again. And today we're going to talk more about the wave of marijuana deprioritization sweeping the country. First, what does deprioritization mean legally?
Well, it does not require cops to do any particular change in policy. That is, if they really choose to, they can generally ignore the will of the voters on these issues. However, in jurisdictions where they're listening to the voters, and in some jurisdictions they certainly are making a good faith effort to do that, Seattle, Washington is one fine example, where they passed an initiative that says minor marijuana offenses should be the lowest possible priority in 2003, And as a result, they've had a 75% reduction in the number of marijuana arrests in that city. And in fact, the latest example is we were just at the Seattle Hemp Fest, where there were roughly 150 to 200,000 people there over a two-day period. The vast majority were smoking marijuana relatively openly, and there was not one single arrest. And this is the third year in a row there has not been a single marijuana arrest. So although police could ignore these initiatives that give them some direction, mostly they want to listen to their own citizens. They obviously recognize that if they're following a pattern of enforcement that's different than the majority of the citizens want, they're probably not going to have a long career in that particular police department.
Keith, these initiatives are very successful right now, but they're not completely new.
That's right. There's a little history here. The earliest attempt at this was way back in the 1970s when Ann Arbor, Michigan passed a $5 fine for marijuana smoking in Ann Arbor. Now, Ann Arbor is the location of the University of Michigan, and so there were, a lot of campus activities to support that, et cetera. But what they realized was, as long as marijuana was going to be illegal under state law, if they could offer a less damaging alternative as a local ordinance, and if they could convince the police to use that, then obviously it's a lot less damaging to an individual if they have to mail in a $5 check than it is if they get arrested and have to get bonded out and defend themselves in a criminal against a criminal charge. So there's some history to this idea of let's trivialize the offense until we have the political support that we can actually finally legalize it. And these more modern efforts are really an extension of that initial effort that was started in the 1970s.
So we have municipal ordinances in Santa Barbara, Santa Monica, now Missoula, Montana. How do the states react when municipalities within them deprioritize marijuana?
Well, it goes both ways. In Seattle, for example, when they passed their initiative and someone asked the chief of police a couple of years ago how come they didn't make any marijuana arrests at the Hemp Fest, he cited the initiative as the reason. He said, look, the people have spoken. They've indicated where they want their priorities, and that's what we're trying to do. So there is some examples of law enforcement listening and following, and really makes a world of difference in how the criminal justice system functions. On the other hand, we have other examples as well. In Denver, Colorado, a few months ago, or I guess it was last summer, they passed an initiative to eliminate all penalties for possession of an ounce or less under the city ordinance, even though the state law is only a $100 fine anyway. Colorado as a state has sort of decriminalized. They've left a $100 fine in place, but there's no arrest and no possibility for jail. But in Denver, they wanted to go the whole way and just get rid of the marijuana law altogether. There, the mayor and the chief of police announced that they didn't care what the initiative said, that in fact they were going to go ahead and enforce state law, and in fact they have up to this point. And that's one of the reasons why that initiative that was approved in Denver has now gone statewide. There's an effort to not give them the choice to enforce state law. Let's just change state law as well. But understand, the reason that these are attractive is that with a voter initiative, you can go around the legislature to a great degree. You know, when you're dealing with a state legislature, you kind of are limited to the lowest common denominator. You'll have some legislators who are progressive and who are from urban centers and would probably support decriminalizing marijuana, but then you've got other parts of the state that are very rural and oftentimes very conservative, and sometimes they're still caught up in reefer madness. So to get a state law passed, you have to come up with something that everybody or a majority of the entire legislature can support. So you end up trading off much of what you're trying to accomplish. With these voter initiatives, you can go into these urban areas in particular where you do have majority support for a far more progressive policy, and you can indicate to the local officials that they do not want their tax dollars spent chasing and arresting and prosecuting marijuana smokers. So I think it's a wonderful tactic, and it's one that seems to be giving us allowing us to make some progress.
And what makes these initiatives effective locally and statewide?
Well, unfortunately, there is no such thing as a national voter initiative. In other words, under our federal constitution, the only way you can change laws is legislatively and if the courts declare something unconstitutional. But there is no third alternative of the voters acting directly. And in fact, only about half of the states have a voter initiative. But nonetheless, you can see how this can be used. You can go into those states that do have a voter initiative. You can offer these progressive alternative policies to the voters, and if they're approved, you begin to build a nation, a national movement that eventually should be strong enough that we can then go back to the remaining states that don't have a voter initiative and enact similar policies in the old-fashioned way by state legislation. But there is no national alternative, unfortunately. When it gets to changing national law, we really have to do it through Congress. That's the only alternative.
So if Congress could help in this arena, what might they do?
In fact, if they simply passed a states' rights bill, for the Barney Frank bill on medical use of marijuana, for example, doesn't require a state to adopt the medical use of marijuana or legalize it. It just simply says we want to amend federal law so we get the federal law out of the way, and the states that wish to legalize the medical use of marijuana would be free to do so. So we could do the same kind of thing. We could say it's the belief of the federal government that marijuana enforcement should be the lowest possible priority, and therefore we want to amend federal law to give those states that wish the opportunity to either decriminalize marijuana or to make it into a minor offense. Yes, they certainly have the authority to do that. Now, realistically, if we had the political support to achieve that in Congress, then we could probably also just pass a regular marijuana decriminalization bill and get it done under federal law. And we obviously don't have that kind of support yet. We can't yet even get the medical use of marijuana approved, so obviously we don't have support yet to decriminalize marijuana in Congress.
And Keith, if these initiatives get passed, it seems like much of the country will now live in an area where marijuana has been decriminalized in some way. So where are all those national politicians?
Well, certainly there is beginning to be a network of elected officials who recognize that we ought not to be arresting marijuana smokers. They're not yet anywhere near a majority in most states or in Congress. But, for example, we do anticipate that we will have a marijuana decriminalization bill introduced in the Congress after the first of the year in the new Congress. We used to have a marijuana decriminalization bill introduced every year from like 1973 up through 1985. But the mood of the country turned more conservative about that time. And since then, the members of Congress who've been willing to put their head above the firing line on the marijuana issue have focused on the medical issue. They have not been willing to introduce a decriminalization bill. But we've been working behind the scenes with a handful of folks, and we're confident that we will have some good news on that to announce shortly after the first of the year. I don't think that you will see an attempt to standardize all of these various attempts at decriminalizing or trivializing marijuana offenses.
Keith, it's always a privilege to have your legal expertise here on the Audio Stash, especially when it comes to things like deprioritization. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Links for more information about the deprioritization initiatives on ballots this fall are up at normalaudiostash.com. If you live in an area where you'll have a chance to vote, register now. Don't wait. Get ready to make your voice heard for marijuana law reform.
Where will you find the executive director of Normal at 420 on most days? Nah, he will not likely be imbibing in the sacred herb, but he will be tuning into the next Normal Audio Stash for important news and information concerning marijuana. This is Normal's executive director, Alan St. Pierre, in Washington, D.C., and if you've got a phone line and a computer, then you too can make a daily cannabis connection with Normal's popular daily Audio Stash podcast. Normal is growing the truth about cannabis, and the harvest is yours to reap. Tune in every day at 4:20 p.m. for your daily Audio Stash. Get hooked up with Normal's daily and weekly news podcast by visiting norml.org or normalaudiostash.com.
This has been Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Thanks to Keith Strupp, Vivian McPeak, Norm Stamper, and John Nicholson for contributing to today's show. Thanks to Podshow.com for all the great pod-safe music. We feature the band Carne Cruda as our theme. Be make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. Red Aphid Interactive Media for the podcasting technology. We're back at 4:20 tomorrow. If you listen to the Audio Stash, cast your vote at Podcast Alley or other podcast directory services. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 4:20 tomorrow. The podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.